This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to hear where your favorites are playing, or maybe try something different. The online Concert Billboard at WUSB.FM has schedules for months ahead. And look for WUSB Concert Billboard Group on Facebook for any last-minute shows. The WUSB Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
And a very good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday night. Sorry, the CD player's not working. The microphone's not working. Nothing's working. That's why we're not doing live radio, except for this couple of minutes here. Because we just wanted to introduce the taped feature that will be on tonight. Actually, we have Kyle joining us live from Seattle.
Hi.
I'm not sure you're working either.
I'm not working?
I don't think you're coming over the board. This is unbelievable. Nothing is working in this place. What else is new? Maybe people can... If I move the phone over here, let's try that. Okay. I'm so sorry, everybody. Kyle, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Yeah, it's not coming over the board, but it's coming over the phone. I have the phone next to the microphone. We only have a couple of minutes because we're introing a program that we recorded last January, I believe. Do you remember this, Kyle? We were in Switzerland.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that trip. We had just left Berlin from the Congress, I believe, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and we chose to go to Switzerland, and we visited Liechtenstein and just explored in a place that I'd heard a lot about. I really wanted to go there. It was very wintry, you know. We had been to all these cold places, so it seemed fitting.
It was wintry, but it wasn't snowy. There wasn't snow on the ground, but it was cold.
Right, right.
But the piece we're going to do tonight, last week, I don't know if you remember what we did last week, but basically we aired the brief parts where we were in phone booths listening to the music, and they played music in Swiss phone booths for some reason.
Awesome. That was really fun.
Yeah, it was fun. But we played mostly Swiss radio last week because it was an abbreviated show, and we had a couple of journeys to pay phones. Tonight is much longer. Tonight we're actually speaking with a friend of ours from Zurich, and we're standing right near the place that that we stayed, which really was an incredible place. I think you picked it out, but it was right next to these train tracks, and I love seeing trains go by, and right out our window we could watch trains all day and all night. I didn't get to see the city at all. I stayed, just watched the trains going by. But they were able to drag me outside for a little bit so I could do this interview with this friend of ours in Zurich. It was an interesting time, don't you think?
Yeah, it was fun. That was a very busy corridor there, and it was on the sort of upside of the hill of the town, and we just watched and talked with our friend. He had showed us around a bit, and he had also been at the same event we had gone to in Germany, and he also took us to Revamp It, which was a hackerspace there, and showed us a great time. And so it's a really interesting conversation we had while the trains are whizzing by.
Yeah, really cool. So our friend Maxim will be joining us in just a moment as we journey back to January of this year, under the many trains going by in Zurich, Switzerland. And next week we have, I believe, a French show. Remember, we went to Paris after that, so we did some radio, as far as I remember. Yes, that's what we're going to do. We'll do a show from there next week. So, Kyle, it's great hearing from you. Unfortunately, we can only speak to you for a couple of minutes, as it's a very tight program tonight.
I understand that, and I hope everyone out there in Long Island is doing well, and yeah, I'll sit back and listen with you.
Okay, yes, let's hope and pray that this CD player works better than all the other ones. Enjoy. And we're still here in Zurich. Say hi, Kyle.
Hi.
We're actually a bit outside the city, standing here with our friend Maxim.
How are you?
Maxim is from Switzerland. You came from Basel, right?
Yes, originally I was born in Basel, and I probably moved to Zurich about 15 years ago.
Very cool. We've been wandering around this city for the last few days. Yeah, actually, we're right underneath the flight path of I guess, Zurich Airport. There's a lot of industry around us. There's electrical substation, airports, various other things. And, oh yes, there's also a bunch of train tracks here. The train's just passing now. It looks like a bullet train. Is that the kind of train that is?
Actually, it looked like a German ICE train.
Looked like it, but it said S whatever. Switzerland has all these three-letter acronyms for trains.
SBB, which is Schweizerische Bahn. I don't know. Sorry.
Well, it's interesting because we're at this very strange sort of industrial area behind the hotel we're staying at. And I'm in heaven because the window from our hotel looks out over all these train tracks, and I like watching trains go by. Literally, a train will go by every few minutes. And, boy, you people have a lot of trains. I mean, wow. We were on a train last night going into Zurich, and it was full of people. And I can't think of anywhere in the United States where at that hour going into a city would be so full, and it was only one train of many. What are people doing when they travel on trains? Are they just always going back and forth?
Well, you can travel pretty much anywhere with the train. So, you know, if you want to travel up to the mountains, go for skiing, you can take a train. You can travel to the city, go out drinking. You can, you know, there's like no place I can think of where you cannot take public transportation here.
Yeah, it does seem that way. The train's going every which direction. And Switzerland is a relatively small country, but you've got us beat on that. You might even have the Germans beat, because not only do you have a really extensive train network, but it just is so well integrated, even down to the tram level. Now, Kyle, when we got into the city, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know where we were going, but we almost instantly were able to figure it out based on the ease of the tram system.
Yeah. Yeah, we weren't sure we were going to be getting onto the tram because we didn't have adequate tickets. I think we only had enough change for one ticket. And then I found a machine that took credit cards and also would accept bills. That was down into the bottom of the station. But once we got that, we started looking at the maps and figured how to get one tram to the next tram. And that tram took us to the front of the place where we're staying. And we've just continued to use it in the same way, and it's really cool because in the tram they'll predict destinations, they'll predict at which stops what trains are going to be available, and they'll predict how soon you're going to be at the next stop. And
those aren't predictions though, those are facts.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, they got it down to a science here. They'll say, okay, the next stop is this particular station, and the number 14 tram will connect there in 3 minutes, followed by the number 7 tram in 4 minutes. I don't know how they do it.
They actually use GPS and cell phone technology to transmit that data back and forth, so the trams always know where they're at. And the signs you see at the tram stops, they actually know when the tram's coming. So even if, like, for some reason they're running late, which hardly ever happens, but even if they're running late, they will show you how late it is and how much more minutes you got to wait until it comes.
That's how we know, because we have GPS, you know. I don't know why we can't do things like this.
Yeah, we have displays, too, and very often they're wrong.
Yeah, they lie. They say something's... they say a train is going to be here in 3 minutes, 2 minutes, and it just gets erased, and they start over again. It's if they even have that at all, it's really pretty incredible. But that's, you know, that's one thing. That's one part of the whole Swiss way of life, the efficiency.
Yeah, that's sort of emblematic of a lot of the ways they tie things together here in Switzerland. A great example would be language. There's German, there's French, there's a lot of English.
Now that kind of train is what? Is that an S-Bahn?
That's an S train, yes.
And that's just a suburban rail?
Yeah, exactly. And they have, like, in urban areas, they got S trains. Like here in Zurich, we have a lot of S trains that, you know, go like up to 50 kilometers outside of Zurich.
And that's a double-decker train with an engine. Is that a diesel engine, Kyle? Behind it?
No, that was an electric one with overhead wire.
Nice. Okay, so that's two trains we've seen so far. Two trains.
They also have Swiss German, which is actually what I heard we talked a little bit about is more like what you said, Basel German and Zurich German.
There's a lot of different dialects, and especially in the German speaking part, depending on whether you come from Bern or Basel or St. Gall or Zurich people.
I'm sorry, another train is passing by now. I just have to announce the trains. Now that, what kind of train looks like a more traditional long distance train?
Yeah, that looks like a train that just travels between cities in Switzerland. Yeah, absolutely. Like an inner city express or something.
And looking at them going by the hotel window, they're always filled with people, no matter what direction they're going in. I look in the rush hour, and just as many seem to be going into the city as away from the city. So that's incredible. I'm sorry, continue with the language discussion.
There's the different cities, they speak their own dialect, so people, like when I talk my
terribly Swiss, sorry to interrupt yet again, but there's another train going by. This one looks like another S-Bahn trip on a different track in a totally different direction, and that's going rather slowly. It's only going about 40 miles an hour, I'd say.
Because I think right back there's a stop for it, so that's why it's probably slowing down. Yeah,
okay. And as you can see, almost every seat is filled with people. There's a pretty good crowd there. And so quiet, too. Your trains, I was marveling at this the other day, how incredibly soft they are. You don't even hear them moving sometimes.
I think they spend a lot of money on, quieting down that technology. Absolutely.
We need to do that. Again, I'm sorry. Hopefully that'll be the last train for a while. we're not trying to make a point here as to how many trains they have in this country. It just happened to work out that way. So every town seems to have their own variation of the language.
Right. So you can immediately tell where somebody grew up. I mean, usually your language doesn't change anymore. So my language is the Basel dialect. And
terribly sorry, but here's another train. This one looks like... Is that a long-distance train or another S-Bahn?
I think that looks like an inter-regio train, which is inter-regions, and this probably goes like up to 100 kilometers as well. Okay. So I think they use like the same lines as the S-trains, but they don't stop at every stop.
I honestly don't think it's possible for another train to go by because they'd be too close on the tracks, and it might be a little unsafe. So I think we have some time to actually discuss the language. Now, you can tell where somebody is from. Just can you give us an example of maybe the words, how something might be different? It's different from German,
yeah.
Right away. I even can tell that. But you can tell the actual part of Switzerland someone's from.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to think of a word that would sound a lot different in the different dialects.
Yeah, it's tough being put on the spot, I realize. But... Well, it's strange because...
Yeah, you can say... So, for example, I can say, ich gang auf Basel, which means I'm going to Basel. And then somebody else would say... that was a bad example. I should use second person. Gosch auf Basel.
What were you thinking?
I'm totally confused now with the English as well. It just screws me up. And hold on. I mean, give me another minute.
Hold on, here's another train. This is another S-Bahn going on the other track there, heading outward. Very long, these trains, too. Look, it's got an engine in the middle, and then it's like a totally different type of car. That was weird. I never saw that. Oh, look, there's another train going the other direction, passing by at the same time. I'm blown away by this. It's really, you know, I could stand on the Northeast Corridor, which is the busiest train section, I think, in the States, and I wouldn't see as many trains in 6 hours, I don't think. It's pretty amazing. So
I can't think of a word, but it's like small nuances that just make it up in the pronunciation and the way they say the words, and then you hear it. And then there's also French and Italian and Romansh, right? And Romansh is like a really small language that is almost, it's kind of a shame, it's almost a dying language. They speak in the mountains in Graubünden, and they have like special programs now in school, though, so that the children still continue to speak that language so it doesn't die out.
Oh, interesting. I thought that language had to do with the Roma, but it's totally different?
Yeah, no, it is different, yeah.
And again, here's another train. This is, looks like another S-Bahn heading out on a different track. Again, filled with people. Can you read where it's going? All the trains have destinations printed on the side of them.
Yeah, this one is going to Niederweningen.
Okay. Is that far?
No, it's probably like 20 kilometers north.
Incredible. And of course, in the streets, we mentioned the tram system is very extensive and buses everywhere. It's just very easy to get around. So this country is, we've noticed it's rather, people conform a lot. There are a lot of rules, a lot of things you can't do. For instance, on Sunday, you're not allowed to hang your laundry outside. You're not allowed to garden. You're not allowed to wash your car. Is that kind of thing unusual? Is that, you get used to that?
Well, you do, right? And I wouldn't say that everybody obeys to all the rules, right? Usually
they get turned into the police if they don't.
I haven't heard of anybody like getting thrown into jail for hanging his laundry out or something.
And we have another train coming by. I was getting a little worried there. What's this? This looks like another bullet train heading in the other direction. And look, it's one of those double bullet trains. See, they have two of them facing each other.
A German ICE train again, right?
They do look that way, but I've yet to see a German ICE train pass by here. I think that's a Swiss train. And they can separate. They can separate in the middle and go to two different destinations at some point. All right, I'm a little upset we haven't seen a freight train go by, but I guess we've only been out here about 10 minutes. Wow. We were talking about rules and regulations and things.
Oh, right. Yeah. So if you live like, for example, if you live in an apartment complex, right, and like there's like one washing machine for the complex and like there's a plan of when every apartment gets to wash, what day of the week, and Sundays you can't wash or you shouldn't wash. Let's just say it like that. I mean,
if you can't wash your own clothes.
Right. On Sunday, Sunday's Sunday, and Sunday everything's closed.
Here comes another train. This looks like another long-distance train.
Looks like an Interregio again.
Again, full of people.
Before. Yeah, it is full of people. Well, you know, it is.
Sky car in the back there.
Yeah, it's got the panorama car in the back, which is nice.
Very nice. You mean you can't run a washing machine on a Sunday? Someone's going to get upset if you do that.
If it's in the common area, then yeah, you can't do it on, or you shouldn't do it on a Sunday. There's always exceptions to the rules. So, you know, people understand, like if you're a family and your kid just, you know, peed in bed or something, then you do your laundry, right? I mean,
is there a paper to file to get an exception for that?
Yeah, no, fortunately there's not, right? I mean, yeah, I mean, common sense still applies. I mean, there are rules, but, you know, at the end of the day, common sense does apply.
I hear there is a lot of paperwork, though.
Yeah, there is, but you know what? I've been to the States, and I had to fill out a lot of paperwork for my visas and stuff, so I think every government has their good amount of paperwork everywhere, so.
Now, Maxim, you lived in Connecticut for a while. Yeah. So what are your impressions of the States based on that?
I think it's a great country. I mean, to travel, it's fantastic. You know, and you can tell it's probably a lot easier to travel in the U.S. than it is here, just because things
You're
are...
You're kidding, right? I mean,
no,
you just saw 50,000 trains go by.
All right. So, yeah, public transport obviously doesn't work. But if you got a rental car or something, it's just, you know, everything's a lot cheaper and easier to get around. Here, I think if you... if you travel with the public transport, I agree, it's a lot better here, but it's also a lot more expensive. Some of the other impressions, I mean, I think I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great area to live. You know, you can go up north, you can go ski, you can go down south, hang at the beach in Florida, you can go out west, desert. It's a great country.
Huge country. I mean, those are thousands of miles apart, though, those places you described. So it takes time. Did you drive around a lot or fly?
I did, actually. In 2004, I spent 2 months just driving from east to west, and it was great. It was fantastic. And it's just every time you started to deal with administration and DMV and I don't know what, that's when it got painful, right? But, I think every country has those sides as well.
It's been about 3 minutes since we've seen a train. I'm frankly getting a little worried. So you think something's gone wrong. This is very unusual. In this country, if things are late by even a minute, people get upset. I'm not exaggerating, right? The trams, for instance.
There's clocks everywhere, too. It's actually really helpful. You get the sense that people do keep time. And I think Switzerland is actually known for watches.
I think that's one of their core exports, right? There are a lot of fine watches, but also like the cheaper ones that get exported all over the world.
And so this then translates into people's sense of punctuality and stuff. There's a sort of an expectation that you're to be on time. And we understand that if you're too early, that's bad. And being late is unheard of.
that's probably right.
Of course, we were technically late meeting you earlier because, well, there was misunderstanding as to where we should be exactly. That's an airplane. That's not a train. Oh, wait. I think I hear a train coming. Yes, there is a train coming from somewhere.
Oh,
there it is.
There's also a human coming. We need to step to the side.
Human coming. There aren't very many of those, but that was a what?
That was an S train again.
Yeah. Okay. Again, the equivalent of a suburban train going by. I'm sorry. What was the last thing?
We were late.
Oh, yeah. We were late meeting you. Well, actually, we were outside. You were inside. So, but while you were inside, were you simply thinking these Americans, they just cannot be anywhere on time?
Well, you know, yeah, I got used to that, right? I mean, I think the further out west you go, the more...
Oh, this could be the freight train I was waiting for. Hold on. Yeah, that looks like a freight train. There we go. Look at that. That's a thing of beauty. Can't tell what they're... What do you think is in there, Kyle?
Cargo.
Well, it says cargo on the side, true.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it could be anything. It's covered boxcars. All right. That's our first freight train. We understand the punctuality issue. And, of course, with all the different... Is that another damn train? This is getting ridiculous. Yeah, here's another train over here. That sounds like another freight train. It's a second freight train. Unbelievable. And that's got oil.
What?
That's got like oil things, right? The oil cars.
Oh, the cars.
Yeah, the cars.
Yeah, they're oil. They're tankers.
This is TAM oil, and TAM oil is actually from Libya.
You're saying this train came from Libya?
No, but it's just they do business with Libya here.
Wow, we don't get to do that back home. So this is what happens when you do business with Libya. You get lots of freight trains going through. Look at that. That's a long one. Where else can you hear the sound of freight trains going by on the radio? That's the last car. I had my back turned to the other track, so I probably missed a few trains while I was watching the freight train. But, wow, it's getting to the point of absurdity almost. Timeliness is a very important thing. Cleanliness is another important thing. And bells. You hear the bells? What is it with the Swiss and church bells? They're always going off.
I don't have any relation to any church, so I really cannot comment that much on it. But, yeah, they do like their bells signaling the time. Pretty much all day, every 15 minutes actually, and like every full hour it would ring the amount of hours that's on the clock.
There's another train, you can barely see that one. That's using that middle track. I don't think we've seen that one being used yet. Looks like another long distance train. Okay, that's gone.
That's true.
And a plane going over us at the same time. Yeah, but the bells, they ring constantly, calling people to prayer, I guess. I heard this. I mean, if this is true. I heard that depending on your religion, you're expected to pay a certain tax. I think Catholics pay a certain amount. Protestants pay another amount. Atheists don't pay anything at all, right?
Yeah, that's exactly true, yeah.
There's a good system. I like that system. So you subscribe to a religion, and you pay for that, and I guess that's sort of your passageway into heaven or something, that you're paying this extra amount of money.
Well, Yeah, I mean, you pay for the pastor who holds the morning mass or whatever. I mean, he needs to live somehow as well, right? So, and also the church itself, there's maintenance needed for it.
Usually, pass the hat in the States. Do they not do that here?
I don't know. Like I said, I don't go to church, so.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to go inside one and see what they actually do.
Each church in the States is usually responsible for their own funds, and you know sometimes they have a larger parish or diocese for the region, and you know in the case of Catholicism that goes all the way up to Rome, and the Vatican, but the churches themselves are independently responsible to raise money, and other faiths. I mean, they obviously don't have the Vatican or something, but they have like regional representation, you know, maybe a little bit looser, but they're still independently responsible for their own monies and whatnot. And, yeah, that's sort of different to have it just organized right in the taxing or right in the laws of government. I mean, that would be, that people would be up in arms, right? You know, church and state, no separation, all of that, but sounds like they just sort of take care of it here and, you know, get it right out of the way. So it's up front, you know, so.
Here people don't seem to object to paying taxes nearly as much as people do in the States. And it's weird, too, because this is by no means a socialist-oriented state at all. It's very conservative. But you guys occasionally, well, first of all, you vote for things about every 3 months, right? There's elections of various sorts.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's, you know, it's almost to the point where they're, because the participation is not that good at the elections. And, you know, people think that, you know, that's because there's so many of them, you know, that people aren't going out to vote on things anymore. So like the last time, I believe the average usually is around 30% of people voting, right?
And as this other train is passing us by, and again on the middle track, which seems to be the most popular track to be used now, looks like another S-Bahn train. Am I right identifying that?
Yeah, that does look like a S train. You can always see it at the end. It's got the sign on the top. And actually, no, that one looked like a Regio, like a, almost like a long-distance train.
I see. Now, what was I saying? Religion...
Taxes.
Yeah. So you guys actually voted for tax increases. People voted for tax increases,
yeah,
so that you would not have any sort of a debt. Is that correct?
Exactly. Last year we had a vote to increase the VAT, the value add tax, and it got accepted. And the additional funds are going to be used for, I believe, for the kind of like the Social Security fund. So yeah, and the VAT was raised actually this January 1st. It just got into effect. It went from 7.6 to 8%, which is, you know, still a reasonable rate compared to other European countries.
There's also a bit of fear of change of different cultures, particularly with regard to Muslims. And there's another train. It looks like, what's that, another S-Bahn or regional?
It looks like a S-Bahn, yes.
Okay, heading into Zurich. But I recall Switzerland being one of the countries that banned the building of minarets. And I was looking at the percentage. There's another train. I didn't see that one before. That's just a single locomotive. He lost the rest of his train. He's going to find it somewhere. Yeah, but Muslims make up about, I think, 2, maybe 3% of the entire population, and minarets have been banned. This strikes me as kind of a disproportionate reaction to something. Is that disturbing to you?
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, there is this party here that uses, I call it bar politics, right? It's like the kind of stuff that people talk about in the bar. That gets people angry, and they build on that, and they're pretty successful in doing that. So the thing about the minarets was definitely one thing, and more recently an initiative was accepted to deport foreigners like a criminal. So that was another one of those initiatives. I mean, and the thing with kind of gets me is that, like, the, especially the thing with, like, criminal foreigners, that we already had laws around that. If somebody comes to Switzerland just to become a criminal, then you can already deport them. So there's no need to have, like, a specific law for that. And, yeah, the minaret thing, I think they just built on the fear of the Muslims taking over the world. Yeah, which
pretty popular fear these days.
It is, but, you know, with 2%, they got a long way to go.
And I think you have a total of about 2 minarets in the country to start with.
Exactly, and, yeah, so.
Oh, that sounds a lot like the immigration stuff that's going on in the States, and also I know that's going on in Holland. It's pretty big. Deporting people that are foreign.
But I like, you know, having lived in the States and also here, there's a lot of jobs that people here, they don't want to do, and that's where you know, people from Eastern Europe come in and they do a good job, right? And yeah, well, if they do become criminal, then, you know, it was in the law before that they had to leave. I mean, now they just made it more explicit. They were worried about people coming in and using welfare and misusing that, and, you know, so like that, they can throw them out easier, I guess. But I think it was unnecessary.
Interesting parallel to hacking, of all things, in that if a hacker commits a crime, there's already a word for it. There's already a word for certain types of crimes. You don't need to say the person was a hacker, and that in itself means that they were a criminal. Just like saying somebody is a foreigner doesn't mean they're a criminal, but it's implied. And the fear factor is injected into the people. And it's just interesting how you already have the system in place to deal with criminals, whether they be hackers or foreigners or whatever. There's no need to get people all in a tizzy about this sort of thing. And I think it's just a way of gaining power through fear.
Yeah, and introducing additional laws that I don't think are necessary.
Yeah.
Well, and creating homogeneity.
Yeah. Getting over to economics, we've noticed, Kyle and I have been traveling through Scandinavia and through Germany into Switzerland. We've, of course, noticed the disparity in prices, how things are so much more expensive in the Scandinavian countries and here in Switzerland as well. As another train approaches, we got there. That's an S-Bahn, right?
S-Train.
Heading into Zurich.
I actually took on a job as a dishwasher for part of this trip because of the cost.
If you had done that, you'd be making as much money as a doctor back home.
Don't think it hadn't crossed my mind.
This country has the highest per hour wage of any country on earth, the highest gross national product. It's unbelievable what you guys have here. And credit is almost unheard of. When you guys travel overseas, you pay for your trips in cash in advance. We struggle for the next 10 years to cover the things that we do. It's an interesting parallel to what Kyle and I did last spring, visiting the Balkans, where things were so incredibly cheap. And of course, people there couldn't afford to travel to the places that we were going to. So it's amazing. I would say things here are about twice as expensive as they are in most other places. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. I could see that. I mean, they call it the high price island, so yeah, it is. And I get, there's a couple of stories around. I mean, just recently I had to buy some furniture at home, and I looked for it here in a shop in Switzerland. You know, I saw something, then I saw that it's actually manufactured in France. So I went on the internet and I bought it out of France for about half the price. They delivered it to Zurich, and it was half the price.
Now, tell me if this is true. I read this in a book. By the way, you might have noticed I've stopped announcing the trains. I'm over it. I'm kind of sick of the trains, actually. Dentistry is expensive here in this country.
Yeah, it is.
From that reaction, I guess that's true.
Yep.
I have heard that people actually book vacations overseas so that they can have full dental work done, pay for the vacation, stay in hotels, sightsee, that kind of thing, and it still comes out to less than if they had just gone to the local dentist here. That's true.
That's absolutely true, yes. That's totally true. And here also, the way the health plans work is your dentistry is never covered unless you get an additional health plan, which is then an optional health plan, and which is probably really expensive, so it's probably not even worth it. But yes, that's absolutely true. You can travel to Eastern Europe, and even with the trip and everything, it's probably cheaper than getting it done here.
Wow, so dentists around the world, beware of Swiss people coming to visit you. They're probably having a lot more fun than you could ever afford to have. Incredible. Well, Kyle, is there anything that we have not touched upon in Swiss society? The food is awesome. We've been going to various places. It's just extremely expensive, no matter what we do.
Yeah, we've been very keen on evaluating prices and making sure that we can afford it, and like very, you know, particular about what we order and that kind of thing. But altogether, it's been really amazing here in Zurich because the variety of food is really good. It's just like any other big city. I could go on. There's a lot of cool things that we've noticed.
When you say that we're very particular or we take care, we do. We try to. But you know, the other day we went to a cafe because they had internet access. Well, look at that train. Some of the lights are out on some of the cars. Just had to point that out. We went to a cafe to get free internet access, which was very hard to find. And got a couple of beers, got a couple of sandwiches because we were hungry. And I think I even splurged and had a cup of coffee, and that came to about $60.
I think it was the chocolate chip cookie you got.
I felt that I had earned a chocolate chip cookie, and I was in Switzerland, so damn it, I wanted some hot chocolate. And none of the Swiss Miss nonsense either. But,
Swiss
yeah.
Miss? Swiss Miss? Merry Swiss Miss?
Yeah.
Swiss Christmas.
Yeah, you saw that sign, didn't you? What did it say?
Swiss Christmas.
Swiss Christmas. That was an
it
actual...
It said it in that case.
Swiss Christmas.
Well, speaking of cases... So, yeah, that was $60, that little snack. Speaking of cases, though, you guys invented Helvetica, the font, the type font. Is that correct? In fact, the country is even sort of named Helvetica.
The country, the abbreviation is CH, which stands for Confederation Helvetica. That's correct. And I don't really know the full history behind that, but I believe it's got something to do with the early typewriting and journalists, and they kind of invented that font here, but I'm not sure about the details.
Okay.
So, I don't know, I just wanted to mention that, you know, we did get out of that cafe once we paid the bill.
But well, left, yeah, they preferred it that way.
Is that where you were dishwashing?
Well, yeah.
Almost. We thought they took credit cards, but they didn't.
We almost started washing dishes, but yeah, it was unbelievable for a, like, brisk lunch with, you know, I think the Wi-Fi distracted us. Oh, they had no menu either. That's how they got us.
I asked for a menu, and they said no menu, and then we found out they had snacks, so we said, okay, let's each get a sandwich. We didn't know the sandwiches were, like, you know, $15 a piece, and they were just sandwiches on toast. I mean, they were good, they were okay, but again, it's like, I would say at least double what you would expect to pay for something back home, and it's just, yeah, we feel like the poor relations, it's very hard to catch up, but it is an experience, a learning experience, and great fun, you know, very picturesque. I've learned a lot about how things tie together. And I think someone said the Swiss make the German look inefficient.
Yes, and the French look diplomatic.
Yeah, things like that. Well, guys, I think we're down to our last train. When the next train goes by, we're going to stop, right?
Yeah, when the next train comes by, we will stop. But
try saying that in the States. Stand by any train track and say, well, yeah, we're going to talk till the next train goes by. But we're going to do that here. In fact, I think I can even hold my breath till the next train goes by, but I'm not going
to
do that.
Well, I just want to say I really like Zurich. I would love to come back. I'm glad that we came here, regardless of cost of anything. There's beautiful scenery. The weather was cooperating the whole time. I got to take a lot of pictures. Just walking around downtown Zurich, the canals, the churches, the small streets remind me a little bit of Croatia. Some of the alleyways are very windy and small, and there's cool parks, there's statues everywhere, all kinds of sculpture, and you know, clock towers and churches and the tramways, and there's bustling people on Bahnhofstrasse. There's a lot of energy and a lot of excitement, especially during the day, because I guess everybody goes to bed after 10, but it's just been a real pleasure. And then for us to be able to get out of town very easily on the train and see some of the countryside and see that other country that we went to.
It's a whole different country.
That's a whole different country. and just how easy it all was and how fun just to see the mountains and all that stuff. I mean, I really feel at home because this is, I think, the same latitude as Seattle and perhaps New York.
Yeah.
So the climate, everything's just really nice. The people are pretty nice. We were walking on a very quiet street. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier. I think I did. Someone was just really kind to us and said hi. And even in town, I think people have been pretty generous and just, you know, friendly. I don't know. I haven't gotten too many stern looks. And I don't know. I like the water, too. When you walk all the way out to the end of Bahnhofstrasse, you see the lake and everything. And there's people rowing and, you know, jogging around on the walking trails. And
well, you got a good vibe from this place, I think, the moment we entered it. And I did, too. It was quite attractive.
Clean and approachable.
Efficient,
and
easy to get around.
Very efficient. A lot of English, even though, I mean, there's lots of German and lots of other languages, but way more approachable. People say, oh, Germany, there's all sorts of English there, but there's a lot of English here. It's very easy to get by, I think easier in that sense. And well, I think the train has passed.
Yeah, that is the last train, but, you know, I just you touched upon some subjects that I think are kind of important. For instance, yesterday we were trying to find food after 10 o'clock at night. It was impossible. In Zurich, we could not find a single place open. The whole place is shuttered down. And I think there are regulations that say you have to close down at night. The place really gets kind of quiet. And, of course, Sunday things are completely closed except at the train station. But something of interest that we didn't mention about Switzerland, they're not a member of the EU. They still use the Swiss franc, which they hold dear to their hearts, very solid currency. They did not even join the United Nations until, I believe, 2002, 2003. And that is incredible to me. They are, in fact, neutral on just about every subject out there. And we wanted to just discuss for a moment net neutrality, because what better place than Switzerland to discuss something like that?
Yes. Yeah.
How does Switzerland feel about net neutrality?
I think actually net neutrality is an important topic in Switzerland, and you know, some of the discussions that I'm hearing in the U.S. they don't happen here. I believe we do have a neutral net here.
What train is that?
That's a regio train. Yeah, just the lights were off in the beginning. That's what.
Okay, it looked a little weird.
Threw
I'm sorry.
Me off here. Yeah, but like, so I think one example I could think of, like for example, our cell phone providers. Even though they have internet and they want to lock you into like 2-year contracts, they actually kind of realize that they're just the pipe, right? And you can take any phone and convert it to a different provider, for example, and they don't make a big deal out of it. You can transfer the number, they help you doing it and all that stuff. On the internet itself, like the broadband access you have at home, you know, things like filtering torrent traffic is unheard of here. Even in the when we had the thing about the WikiLeaks.ch domain, actually the switch, which is the registrar for all the internet domains in Switzerland, they actually called us up and they said, "Well, you know, we're not going to close it down. As long as there's no malware or viruses on those sites, we're not going to close it down."
For a while, WikiLeaks.ch was closed down, wasn't it? Not.
But that was a DNS provider out of the U.S. that threw it off. Yeah.
Ah, okay, so it wasn't Switzerland at all.
No, that had nothing to do with Switzerland.
Well, I think there's a lot of cues we could take from the center of neutrality on this planet. I think net neutrality has a long way to go in the States, and there's a lot of cues they could take from the Swiss and their efforts and accomplishments with neutrality. And they've got the net here too. We've done research. And I also want to say there are very dapper, handsome dressers here. They really are stylish. I mean, Zurich's got some incredible, incredible dressers. And, that was the last thing I wanted to mention. I think we would be overlooking something tremendous. I mean, yeah, net neutrality is important, but gosh, they dress well here.
I have to agree. They're pretty sharp, and lots of clothing stores as well.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you like my country.
I like your trains. It's really crazy, though, how many trains there are here.
There have been six trains. I don't know how many trains since we said we were going to stop recording because the last train came. When will it end?
It does end after midnight.
I think that kid's playground is a train.
There is a train there, actually, yeah.
There has to be, of course. It's a future train operator. Not so many planes, though, next to an airport. More trains going by. Oh, here's another train. Look at this. It's amazing.
So would you say that the kids on that swing set, on that playground, are they in training?
Wait, it's nighttime. Are there kids in the swing set right now?
No, but when they are they in training?
Yeah, you could say that.
This has something to do with our conversation on transportation.
All right, it's time to say goodnight now. We're not here way too long, apparently.
It's cold.
It's cold. It's freezing. We're in Switzerland. It's having a great time here. Speaking of Maxim, thanks so much for talking to us, and hope to see you in the States soon.
Well, thanks for having me.
Good night.
And you're listening to Off the Wall from Zurich, except we're not in Zurich anymore. Yeah, we do have trains in this country. I don't want to mislead anybody. In fact, there's a representative named John Micah, Republican representative of John Micah of Florida, who wants to bring high-speed rail to this country twice as fast as Amtrak is proposing. Amtrak is saying it'll take, get this, 30 years, to have high-speed rail between New York and, between Washington, D.C. and Boston, including New York. According to the president of the U.S. High-Speed Rail Association, yes, it does exist, Andy Kunz says it absolutely can be done. No one said it's going to be easy. The Northeast Corridor will probably be the most complicated rail line in America to upgrade. But there are lots of people in this country who do want high-speed rail to get here, or just rail of any sort. And in fact, speaking of trains, we have this story that just came in today. A Russian-operated train has arrived in Paris after a 37-hour cross-continental journey, inaugurating a new line that directly connects Moscow, Berlin, and the French capital for the first time in nearly two decades. That just happened today. The train, operated by a subsidiary of Russian railway company RZD, left Moscow early Monday, arriving in Berlin the following morning, and in Paris on Tuesday evening. The train traveled 3,177 kilometers at speeds of up to 200 kilometers per hour, 124 miles per hour, rather slow, actually, by European standards. It's made up of 8 sleeping carriages, a bar, and dining cars. This train has moved on. Three trains a week are scheduled to run during winter, and 5 per week during summer. Tickets are sold out through the end of the year, so if you're thinking of being a part of that, you can forget it. Write to us, otw@2600.com. As long as we're on the subject of trains, let's hear a different perspective.
I have a theory about railway engines being bad-tempered. Well, when I say bad-tempered, that's putting it mildly. They're actually livid, furious beasts, and they loathe humanity. So different from a ship, which is a sad, proud, graceful creature. You know, I can never understand why an engine driver isn't afraid of the monster he's in charge of. But he isn't. And when the train's about to leave, he pulls down a lever, and this livid beast is unleashed. Like this. And so forth on its journey. Well, now we've unleashed this livid beast, we find it still equally furious, and it has a colossal argument with the rails it's running on. Like this. Biddle-a-dirt, giddle-a-dirt, diddle-a-dee, biddle-a-dirt, giddle-a-dirt, diddle-a-dirt, biddle-a-dirt, giddle-a-dirt. And that goes on the entire journey. And not only does it have a colossal argument with the rails it's running on, but also all the other rails when they dare to cross its own. Like this. Biddle-a-dirt, giddle-a-dirt, diddle-a-dee, biddle-a-dee, and so on. Well, then we get out into the country, and we come to a little rustic bridge spanning the railway. It's quite inoffensive, this dear little bridge, but the engine can't bear anything within its reach at all, so it shouts at the little bridge as it goes underneath. like this. Biddle-a-da, giddle-a-da, diddle-a-da, biddle-a-da, biddle-a-da, giddle-a-da, biddle-a-da. Incidentally, talking about this argument with the rails, this biddle-a-da business, I'm not a much travelled man, but I'm told this goes on all over the world in all the different railways. For instance, in France, exactly the same thing takes place, and the language is different, you know. Suck it yourself. It's all much the same thing. And speaking of France, the first time I ever went there, I arrived at Calais, and very close to the quayside, I came across my first glimpse of a French engine. I was vastly impressed, because it seemed to me to be four times as big and eight times as livid as any engine I'd ever seen before. To begin with, it had eight of everything, cow catchers and bells and everything but the kitchen stove hanging all over it, added to which it had a very bad-tempered word written across the front. It just said, "No," which I know is horrid to start with. And it was a great pleasure to find that I was allowed to do something in France that I'm not allowed to do in my own country, namely that I could walk across the line to get to the platform on the other side instead of going over by that maddening bridge. So I picked up my little bag and walked in front of this monster, cowering away from it, and suddenly, to my amazement, it let out an extraordinarily effeminate voice. It seemed to me to be so enormously masculine, and yet as it started on its journey for Paris, all it managed to summon up was, "Fuh!" Of course, I may be wrong about that, but it really does seem to me to be a little peculiar. Proceeding on our journey, we find from time to time that we tear through certain wayside stations where no train has ever deigned to stop. People have been standing waiting on these stations for centuries, but the engine ignores them, shouting as it rushes past like this. Biddle-a-da, biddle-a-da, giddle-a-da, biddle-a-da, 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 biddle-a-da. Then, of course, in time, we get to a manufacturing town. Now, when you get to these big towns, if you look out of the window, you'll notice some things called sidings, on which a quite inexplicable thing called shunting takes place. This, of course, is just an excuse on the part of the railway company to provide homes for old engines. You see, there comes a time with an engine when it ceases to be virile and hearty, and it just becomes long-funneled and tiresome, so it's put on one of these sidings and given a lot of trucks to play with. And if you happen to have a bedroom anywhere near a siding, you'll find that you're woken up very early in the morning by trucks taking umbrage. And it goes like this. To the far end. Then, of course, there's another old gentleman at the other end who decides to do the same thing and biffs them all back again. And in this way, the railway company is carried on. Now, there's one thing I must know before I die, and that's something that takes place in a tunnel outside Snow Hill Station, Birmingham. You dash into the tunnel very fast, and the brakes go on, and you look out of the window, and all down the tunnel at intervals are a lot of flare lights. And in between these flare lights are men, standing. They're leaning on shovels and pickaxes and golf clubs or anything they can get hold of. And these men, they live there, definitely. And as you go slowly through the tunnel, an extraordinary noise starts at the far end and slowly crashes past the window. I've no idea what it is, but it goes something like this. Blong, bong, bong, bong. Balong, dalong, dalong, dalong. I think it's a piece of tin, which has been nailed to the side of the tunnel with some number on it or something which doesn't seem to mean anything to anybody, and it's too big. And it strikes the side of the train as it goes through. And presumably the men are merely there to bend the tin back, ready for the next train to hit it when it goes through the tunnel. Now, lastly, I'm going to tell you the one thing that an engine loathes more than anything else, and that is another engine coming in the opposite direction. That it cannot bear. And by this time, you'll have settled down, having got quite used to this diddle-a-dum, diddle-a-dum nonsense and all the other maddening noises, when suddenly, to your horror, this new thing bursts upon you and nearly knocks you on the carriage floor. It's the most frightening thing in the world, and it goes something like this. Biddle-a-da, 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 hall-a-da, 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 hall-a-da-da, biddle-a-da, diddle-a-da, biddle-a-da. Well, folks, that's all. Back to the asylum. Goodbye.
All aboard for Night Train. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Off the Wall from Zurich, Switzerland, which then turned into a special about trains somehow. Next week, we'll be in Paris, and weeks after that, who knows? You can write to us, otw@2600.com. Have a good night.